Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. Hey. I'm Heath Mulligan.
Hey.
You're not going to tell them who you are?
Oh, I'm Mark Whitman.
And welcome. I've already said this. We're off kilter. I did a different open. It's fine. This is the Double Dropkick Show.
You're thinking about going, hey, everybody.
Hey, this is the show we talk about. The wrestling you grew up with. I gave Mark the eye. He knows he's got to shut a door. So, we've been doing, the last couple of weeks, you've been listening. We did some great matches from 92, great matches from 93. And because this show is booked logically, this show will talk about some great matches and angles from 1994.
But before, 1998.
So I'm a little bit sad, Mark.
Tell me why.
Because we put it out there. We're doing a new segment, Marking Out with Mark. Wanted people to send questions. I want to thank Scott Hicks.
Yep.
Scott Hicks is the only person that sent questions. And really, the only question he asked that's left that I guess that we could ask is, when you started wrestling, and the number one goal of wrestling is to make money.
Yeah.
Just like any other job. When you started in wrestling, did you have a figure, and I'm rephrasing Scott's question.
Mm-hmm.
When you started in the wrestling business, did you have a number in mind to think, that's my number?
Nah.
That I'm shooting for?
I really didn't, man. I was just happy to be doing it.
Yeah.
Whatever money would have come, that would have been great. But
yeah.
I mean, I know it was baby steps. My first goal was $300.
Yeah.
So it's baby steps. You're not going to make more than three doing what I was doing. So, I mean, and then it became when I found out what you could make in Puerto Rico, the number became $500 a week.
Yeah.
$300 to do jobs in WWF. That was my goal.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I mean, clearly you want to make Stone Cold, Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan money, but I mean, you got to be realistic. I wasn't that good. I didn't have that physique. And
so we were talking a couple of weeks ago, and you said something to the effect that you were either 15 years too early or 15 years too late. Because I was
15 years too late, more so. I couldn't. Athletically, would never be able to do the stuff that the big men have to do now. I would never have been able to jump over the top rope.
Really?
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen. So I don't know that I was 15 years too early. I was 15, 20 years too late.
But like late 70s, early 80s would have been in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. You take me and Timmy King.
Yeah.
As big as we were.
You could have done some stuff in Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Right. Right. I mean, because there were plenty of guys that weren't near as good as us in the ring.
Right.
And were a lot fatter than we were. And we were, I at the time, was not fat.
Yeah.
You know, I had a little pudge around the middle, but some people would call it fat, but I didn't think I was fat at the time. I just needed to lose a little weight.
320 pounds of solid steel and hit the peel.
As I used to say, the 350-pound mean streak.
I was
Mean Mark, and I would say the 350-pound mean streak.
Oh. Nice.
But that's, you know, that was it. But, yeah, I do think if Tank and I had been 15, 20 years older, that we could have – because back then you could. I mean, you could make it in the territorial system. If you were big with a little bit of talent, you could make it.
Yeah.
You could make money doing that.
Yeah.
By the time he and I got doing it, there was two places, and now there's one.
Right, and at the time you guys were in the wrestling, you were telling me this, the wrestling business was just down.
Well, it was getting hot because of the Attitude Era, but the independent scene, there was nothing going on.
Right.
On the independent scene.
It's not like today where, I mean, we know indie guys off Facebook, they're getting bookings every weekend. I mean, wrestling for four or five different companies.
Right. It just wasn't like that. Like, you couldn't, if you wrestled for one group, they didn't want you wrestling for another.
Right. So, it was just a different mindset.
It was a different deal. They just, I remember, started out with a real small group, and and moved up. There was some, I got courted by a little bit bigger group, and the guys that I was working for got upset. And they were like, man, you can't do both. I was like, well, I mean, that's, they're offering to give me some money. So it's right. Not, you know what I mean? I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do both, and I'll do both.
Yeah.
Because we run on different nights.
Yeah.
But they're willing to pay me, and you're not.
Yeah.
So, and then they started paying me, and I stayed.
I'm telling you, it's those negotiation tactics that you're so well.
Well, I don't know about that, but wrestling was just a business. I mean, it's just a business, man. You're a businessman. If you want to ask for money, they won't pay you. If you're an indie guy and you're not getting paid, it's because you ain't asked.
Right, and now indie guys, they understand you are your own brand and you are your own boss and you are your own business.
Yeah.
And
the young bucks say it all the time. Yeah, you're probably going to say it. Well, they're not pro wrestlers. They're T-shirt salesmen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they make probably more money on T-shirts than WWF offered them on a contract.
I'm pretty sure they did, because allegedly they turned them down. They offered them a tryout and they said no. So they, I mean, I don't know.
You know, and the Briscoe brothers, I mean, the rumor was, I think we even talked about it here, that they were probably going to WWE. And then they stuck with the Ring of Honor. And
they're now, from what I hear, the highest paid act in Ring of Honor.
And right. I mean, they have been there
since day one. And they're good at what they do.
They're great.
Whether they're heels or baby faces, they are incredible at what they do. And they deserve every dime. That they're getting paid.
I hope you can go. I mean, I'm assuming they'll be on the card in Atlanta at the end of August.
Yeah, I hope I can. Hopefully I'm off, man. It seems like all the shows follow my weekends to work.
I'm going to need to talk to your boss.
Yeah, don't do that.
You don't think I can?
I know. You get moved to another crew, and I don't want that. So.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about these matches. 1994, the first one I'm going to throw up at you is from Super Brawl, 1994. Sorry, I don't have the date. I'm a slacker. But it is a Thunder Cage match. Six-man tag, Sting, Brian Pillman, and Dustin Rhodes against Rick Rude, Steve Austin, and Paul Orndorff. If you have not seen the Thunder Cage match, they call it when it's Sting and Flair versus Muta and Terry Funk, is it called the Thunderdome?
It might be. It might be. I think it was Thunder Cage, because Thunderdome would have been.
Oh, copyright.
Copywriter.
That was
maybe a good they match. Called it a Thunderdome Cage match or something like that.
Might be.
It's a great match, whatever.
Right. Now, this one, if you've never seen one of these matches, the first time you see the cage, you don't know what to think. But it's impressive. It's a big old cage.
It really is. It's kind of, if you combine the WWF blue cage and the Hell in a Cell cage, sort of like that, except the top.
It's like a pyramid.
Right. The top is, folds in, but it doesn't go all the way over. But it gives you the room around the ring to get out of the ring and work.
Yeah. This is a really good match.
Yes, it is. Sting, I watched it last night.
Sting, the match is getting ready to start. He comes in and he gets in front of Rick Rude, puts his hands behind his head, and does the hip swivel.
I wish y'all could see Heath doing that.
I did it. I'm like,
yes, he did. It's like he was hula hooping there.
This is after the Brian Pillman Steve Austin match we talked about, where they're wearing the same gear, and in this match they're still wearing the same boots.
Yeah.
And still kind of teasing.
Like, it's funny that after, when they put them together, they really committed to getting new gear. But it's like they're holding out hope they're going to put us back together.
Yeah.
So we're not going to buy new gear, because they wanted to stay a tag team.
Right. One of the things you'll notice in this match is, at this point, Paul Orndorff, he had left wrestling for a few years, and he actually has a bowling alley, I think, in Wilmington or Fayetteville, North Carolina, or Fayetteville, Georgia.
Really?
And he had left wrestling, was managing his bowling alley, and decides to get back into wrestling. Well, he had nerve damage in one of his arms.
How'd you find out about that?
You told me about told me about the nerve damage. It was from the feud with Hogan. Uh-huh. And so when you're watching this match, one of his arms is, yes, it's like he's
twice the size.
It's like he's a, if you've ever seen the,
it's like he's
the Netflix, if you've seen the Netflix documentary Pulling John about arm wrestling, the, like the arm wrestlers will only work out one arm. And so they'll have like one arm that is huge and the other one's just like scrawny. And that's
see,
what.
See, I thought.
All right.
He looked like a guy that hadn't been able to get a date in 15 years.
Will you stop? We don't need to go there. Now,
I don't think we need to go there.
Early in this match, this card takes place from Albany, Georgia. And they show this girl with her face painted like Sting. And Bobby Heenan's like, well, you know who that is, don't you? That's Miss Albany, Georgia, 6 years in a row.
Bobby Heenan just, he was on, man.
He was great.
God, he was great.
I just had a few notes on this match, and, you know, you kind of chime in. Again, Brian Pillman's chops.
Yeah. Brian Pillman's just, this was when Brian Pillman had become great.
Yeah.
You know, on that level of the Steve Austins. To me, he was on that level.
At this point in time, Rude is the Hold on, I want to get it right. He's some type of world champion. The international
champion.
Is it NWA or WCW?
The international title was WCW.
Okay.
The world title was the NWA title.
It's a good back and forth. It is a physical match. A lot of good spots. A lot of bumps into that big cage.
Uh-huh. Steve Austin took incredible bumps there.
He did, man. He was so good. He was so athletic.
Yeah.
You know.
That stupid Owen Hart pile driver.
Yeah.
After Austin told him not to do it, he still did it.
Yeah.
And ruined him, man.
Yeah, it really did. Like, you really go back. You go back and watch Austin from 92, 93, 94, yeah, and even into 95. And watch Austin for about 5 years there.
Of course, arguably, the change in style is when he really started to take off. I mean, so there is that, but it shouldn't have had to happen that way.
No, I agree. Now, this was any other thoughts on this match? This was the semi-main event.
Yeah, I just thought it was a great match.
And then tell us about the main event of that.
Well, the main event was Vader and Flair 2.
Yeah.
With Big Boss Man as the special enforcer. And it was also in the Thunder Cage. But he wasn't Big Boss Man. He was the Boss.
Right.
Which was a knockoff. And one thing I thought about was he really, when he had that nightstick, he really taught himself how to twirl that thing and how to use that nightstick. He committed to that gimmick.
Yeah.
He really was. And really, some of Hulk Hogan's best matches against big men was against Ray Traylor, the Big Boss Man.
Every time Ray Traylor hit the ropes, I thought they were going to snap.
He hit those ropes like he weighed 125 pounds, man.
Yeah.
He threw himself into those ropes with abandon.
Yeah.
You know, he really did, man.
A lot of faith in him.
I think he was one of the more underrated big men that belongs in that conversation. When you talk about the really – now you could, because you talk about a guy that started out doing jobs, and Dusty Rhodes said, you know, I think I can – they noticed how good he moved. That was what – drew Dusty Rhodes' attention. He said, I'm going to take him off TV for 6 months, then bring him back as Jim Cornette's bodyguard. He's not going to sell anything. He's not going to bump for anybody. Dusty Rhodes broke that wooden chair over his head. So it was on the opening credits for years when the chair breaks and the hat doesn't even come off.
Right.
And he's just standing there with the chair hanging around his neck.
Yeah.
And then when of course, it was all so that when he finally did sell to somebody, it would be Dusty Rhodes and it would be huge. Because that was Dusty's ego.
Yeah.
I think Big Bubba represented Dusty Rhodes' ego.
Yeah.
This big monster that wouldn't sell for anybody. You got to be objective when you're talking about your favorites. You got to call it like it is.
There's not a whole lot that I can say about the way I feel about Ric Flair.
Keep going. You sound just like Morgan Freeman. That's great, man.
No honor. There is no honor among thieves. Ric Flair brought hard times on this country when he put hard times on Dusty Rhodes. Daddy.
Just because it's funny to me that we're two bad people.
There were two bad people. And one of them is John Wayne, and he's dead now. And the other one is me. I'm bad, and they know I'm bad. Daddy.
That's great. You nailed it, man. Oh, you nailed it. That was great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is that a pretty good one? Yes, that was good, man. You go back and listen to that. You nailed it, man. That was good.
I think I did. I didn't really do a Morgan Freeman. I did the guy doing.
You did. Yeah, yeah. Morgan Freeman. But it sounds just like the guy doing the Morgan Freeman thing.
Kicked him in the butt and said, a computer took your job. Daddy.
Dusty Rhodes tool, 85.
Hard.
I don't even know what that meant.
My hand is touching your hand.
I got to tell you, during that promo when I was a kid, I'm pretty sure I reached out.
Heck yes.
You know what I mean? I think I did. I remember the promo as a kid.
Right.
Not just because it's been replayed over and over. I remember that as a kid and going, you know, God, Dusty.
You come out here with your Psalms and your John 3:16.
That's Dean Morgan Freeman to do that. Yeah, somebody needs to get him to do that. You talk about your Psalms. You talk about your John 3:16s. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass.
Daddy. No, for Austin, he'd be like, man.
That's right. That's the promo that he should do. The Ringmaster's debut promo. Superstar Steve Austin's here, man.
Okay. I'll do it. I'm going to try to work on that.
Yeah, work on that and do it. Do it. That'd be great. I think you can make it happen. Where was we at? Vader and Flair in the cage. And they handcuff Big Boss Man to the cage.
Yes.
And Harley Race gets the key and comes in, and then they lock the cage again. And Harley Race and Big Van Vader proceed to double team Ric Flair with the Big Boss Man chained to the cage. And what I took away from this was the sense of urgency in the building, that the monster Vader and one of the most diabolical wrestlers of all time, Harley Race, now have Ric Flair locked in a cage by himself, and there's nobody that can help him, and the cage is locked, and the top is electrified.
Yeah, right.
For those that don't know, the top of the cage is allegedly got electric current, so you can't climb into the cage.
Right.
You can't climb out of the cage.
Right.
The only way to get in is through the door.
Yeah.
And Ricky Steamboat and Arn Anderson come down to ringside and have a sense of urgency about them that you never see in wrestling anymore.
Yeah.
Ricky Steamboat's got a steel chair hitting the lock on the cage, trying to break it off so they can get in there and help Ric Flair. And Arn Anderson shaking the side of the cage. And Big Boss Man's going, please, somebody find a key, find some bolt cutters, get me out of here so I can help Ric Flair. Whereas now, you see a babyface getting beat up. John Cena ain't got no friend. John Cena ain't coming to save nobody.
No, no, no.
Babyfaces don't go help one another anymore. And even when they do, they have to play their music first. As though, well, there's something going on out there, and I'd really like to go help my friend.
Yeah.
But before I do, can you cue up my music so they know I'm coming out? I hate when they play music during a run-in. There should be that sense of urgency that I have to get there. This is not about me. Yeah. This is not about my ego. This is not about people knowing that I'm walking to the ring.
That's right.
This is about me helping my friend.
Amen.
My friend is in danger. My friend needs my help. Even if he's not my friend, I'm a good person.
Yeah.
I do what's right because I'm the baby face. And that man, even if he's not my friend, needs my help.
And
nobody does that in wrestling anymore. And the way Ricky Steamboat and Arn Anderson just show up.
Yeah.
No, Ricky Steamboat doesn't come out in Ricky Steamboat, the dragon. He doesn't come out and breathe fire first.
yeah,
and do all that. He shows up with a chair and starts trying to beat that lock off. And then when the big boss man finally gets loose from those handcuffs and gets into the ring, there's a sense of urgency that he has got to stop this beatdown of Ric Flair that's happening.
Yeah.
He pulls out a nightstick, hits Vader with it. Vader falls down, and we get a precursor to the Montreal Screwjob when Ric Flair slaps on the figure four, and as soon as he flops back, the big boss man says, ring the bell.
Mm.
Ring the bell. And they call Vader, and Ric Flair wins the match. And so they say that Vader, and Bobby Heenan's going, I'm sitting 7 feet from the man. I've heard every word that's been said in that ring. I've heard the conversations. I've heard the cussing. I've heard everything. And I never heard Big Van Vader say, I quit. This is a farce. And Big Van Vader, there again, remember when Brock Lesnar a few months ago, a month or two ago, felt like he gets screwed after WrestleMania, and it's a 25, 30-minute segment? All Vader had to do was walk over, grab Tony Schiavone, and say, you get me somebody out here right now. Push him. And he's shaking. You know, he picks up a couple of chairs and slings them, and then he storms off. And it was just as effective.
Yeah.
As the 30 minutes they did with Brock Lesnar.
So, you talked about run-ins. One of the things, you know, when the wrestling we grew up on, they didn't have the entrance. I mean, they didn't have the ramps.
Right.
And at the end of the show, like five out of seven shows ended with a big brawl in the ring. Good yeah. guys versus bad guys.
Yeah.
But what was great is when the bad guys would be getting the upper hand, you didn't hear music blaring. You could just hear, you could watch it, and you got a sense from the crowd, oh, goodness, somebody's coming.
Yes.
And you could see
the crowd standing up as they come down the aisle. You didn't have to see, you're right. You didn't need music. The crowd would let you know somebody was on the way.
Yeah. And they always were, it wasn't ever, like when Hogan comes out and saves Macho Man and the Mega Powers are born, you know, he's coming out with, and Elizabeth's like, come on. And Hogan's like, and he's looking around, and then he looks at the ring and he's like, oh,
right.
Y'all are having a wrestling match out here. Yeah. I didn't even know.
Yeah, exactly. You're right, man. That was a good one too.
But the guys, they would run.
Calm down.
I get excited because I'm thinking about all those times, you know. And they would be in their street clothes.
Yes. Nobody was sitting around backstage in their wrestling gear after their matches. They didn't have the music queued up. They didn't have no pyro queued up. It just, my friend needs my help. I'm going to go help him. Yeah. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
There's no friend.
What is wrong with that?
No honor.
There's no honor among thieves in the first place. So that was my takeaway from that match. The sense of urgency that existed in wrestling then that doesn't exist anymore. Now when somebody's getting beat down, I know that nobody's coming. I'm more shocked when somebody comes down. You know what I mean? Because I know nobody's coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got the most, in WWE, the most spineless, lack of testicular fortitude babyface roster I've ever seen in wrestling.
Yeah.
Where they allow themselves to be verbally castrated every week by a shrill female and her husband, who, if they're supposed to be tough guys, why aren't they kicking his butt?
And if so,
Steve Austin would have never been talked to by Triple H the way he talked to
those guys.
And
the one time Dusty Rhodes stood up to Steph, she got mad about it. He got in trouble.
In real life, he got in trouble because he was not going to be upstaged, and he put his hand up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all he did was put his hand up toward her face.
Yeah.
And now he's since returned, but there was talk that may be the last time you ever see Dusty Rhodes on TV again.
Yeah. And when he had the audacity. There was a gasp in the crowd.
Yeah. Because Dusty Rhodes stood up for himself because he's a man. He's a real man anymore. 70 years old, he was more of a man than anybody. But you know what? He come back on TV. So they got mad at him.
Yeah.
But they put him back. And that's what John Cena tried to talk about on Jericho's podcast. They may get mad at you for the moment.
Yeah.
But you go out there and do what feels right to you.
Yeah.
And they won't stay mad at you.
Right. Yeah, that's a great Thunder.
And that's why I don't care about the WWE roster. That's why I don't care about the babyface.
Right.
Because they don't seem to care if I think they're man, if I think that they're babyfaces or not. That's why we don't care.
One of the great storylines of 2014 leading into 2015 was Jay Briscoe. Maybe back at 13, Jay Briscoe had gotten hurt, so he had to forfeit the world title. So Adam Cole does the tournament, wins the belt, and when Jay Briscoe comes back, his thing is, I never lost the title. So he has this really cool belt made to represent, hey, this is my title belt because I should be the real world champion.
Right.
Well, the Kingdom, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett and Maria steal that belt. Or Matt Hardy steals that belt because he's part of the Kingdom too. And Maria, like, bedazzles it and puts fur on it. And you talk about heat.
Yeah.
And the whole deal is Jay Briscoe is trying to get back at him, and he's trying to get this belt that's been ruined by this woman. And it was just, to me, the Briscoes are a great throwback.
Oh, absolutely. They're
not going to put up with it, you know?
Yeah.
But maybe that's why they didn't go to WWE.
You know, it could be. They might have.
You mean to tell me that here I can talk back to Maria and I can be a man, but if I – yeah, maybe, yeah. Who knows?
I doubt it. I'm sure it was
– money.
Money and probably a fear of how they'd be used because they ain't real young, right? Those guys are in their 30s.
I would think so because – well, they both – I mean, they're – they started when they were young, 18, 19, but Ring of Honor's 13 years. How old is Ring of Honor?
They
just had the 13th anniversary, so yeah, they're in there.
So yeah, you start, and then you talk about 2 or 3 years on NXT, and before, then you get brought to the roster, and you're not the Briscoes anymore.
Yeah,
who are you going to be? Get a new name.
They would be the new Godwins. They'd be chicken farmers.
Right. Let's take everything cool about it. I guarantee you there was a consideration there. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
Wait, these guys are chicken farmers? Guarantee it.
We can use that.
Guarantee you that the Briscoes had to be thinking that.
Yeah. And the Briscoes have to. I mean, here's the decision of an independent contractor, an indie wrestler in 2015. All right, I can go and be on, do a dark match on Raw, or wrestle on Superstars, and get paid, or I can be in the main event at Ring of Honor.
And there are guys like Austin Idol, very, very famously, probably could have been a huge star.
Yeah.
But he knew if he stayed in Memphis, he'd make good money. He didn't have to travel that crazy schedule. And he didn't have to worry about anybody screwing with him anywhere else around the country. And so he stayed in Memphis.
And he knew Idolmania was going to run wild.
That's right.
Everywhere.
Ole Anderson. Oh. Same thing. If people knew how much money Ole Anderson made during the 70s, owning part of Georgia Championship and booking for Crockett at the same time, they wouldn't call him bitter. They'd call him eccentric.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's the truth.
Because you don't ever hear, like, we heard this come out of Ole Anderson's mouth. Somebody was asking him about the Hall of Fame, why he didn't do the Hall of Fame. And he said, there's no money in it.
Yeah.
Why would I do that? There's no money in it for me.
They said, if you didn't care for those guys, why did you do the Horsemen? Money. I thought we were going to make money. That's his. I've heard from a pretty credible source that back in the 70s, between his part ownership of Georgia Championship and then working in the Carolinas for Crockett, going back and forth, that he was making about $750,000 a year. That's 1970s money.
Yeah.
It's not bad because he owned a huge stake in Georgia.
Yeah.
It's not like he owned. 1% like some of these other guys did. He owned a pretty big stake in Georgia Championship Wrestling.
And they were making money from TBS.
Yeah.
House shows.
And then, Last Battle of Atlanta, they were selling out the Omni all the time.
Dude, what if what if, because to me, Ole, what I like about Ole he was a business. You can say, well, the business passed him by.
And maybe it did.
Booking aspect of it and some other things.
But I think it was a lot of talent aspects of it, too. He didn't know how to deal with people.
Right. But yeah. Ole, like if you put Ole in the internet age and say, hey, Ole, you could sell your T-shirts on here and keep 100% of the profit.
Oh, yeah.
Golly. I mean,
hey, you'd have seen evil, mean, and nasty shirts everywhere.
Yeah.
There I am good.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I'd like to. I wonder if we could sell a shirt that's had that on it. I mean, you know,
I'm not crossing Ole Anderson anytime.
I don't want to be on his. He was my favorite man growing up. He was one of my favorites. I tried to get my dad to get me a shirt that said "Evil, Mean, and Nasty," and he wouldn't do it. But
he
was like, as I would watch it, I would go, "That guy's." Those other, because you'd hear the wrestling's not real stuff, and I was like, it might not be, but that guy's scary.
Yeah,
Ole Anderson's scary.
Yeah,
when you're seven, 8 years old, he's a scary man. Because I believed when he said something, it wasn't a lot of loud boast and catchphrases. It was, if I got to get hit in the face five times to land one good shot on you and break your jaw, that's what I'll do. If I get a chance, I'm gonna break your arm.
Yeah.
If I get a chance, I'm going to break your leg. And he told it straight up, just like that. If I get the chance,
he didn't
I'm going
to
break
yell.
Your arm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to try my best to tear your arm out of socket. And I believed him.
Yeah. I think he's – I won't use the word underrated. I think Ole Anderson by this generation is underappreciated.
I just think people see him as this grumpy old man. And it's just like everything else. People criticize things they've never watched.
Right.
If you listen to what Ole Anderson says about the wrestling business, he's the original smart mark.
Right.
He's the guy that's saying what you think wrestling should be.
Yeah.
Listen to what he says about stuff.
Yeah.
He's right there with Jim Cornette. He's the original smart mark.
Yeah. That's pretty fun. I mean, I hadn't thought about that. So this next match I want to throw out from 94, May 15th in Zapopan, Mexico, part of Triple Mania. Triple Mania, they would do three shows in Mexico. This was the second night of the big shows. This was an 8-man tag team match. They brought in some guys from New Japan to work with AAA. And so if you had been following AAA, this match didn't make any sense because you got guys on the same team that had been feuding with each other. But when you get the chance to throw these eight guys in the ring together, you just say, we're going to throw logic out the door for one night, and we're going to let them go. So you got Eddie Guerrero, Psychosis, La Parca, and Blue Panther, who came to the ring with a Panther, against Jushin Thunder Liger, Hijo del Santo, Tiger Mask, and Octagon.
I'd kind of like to see this match.
This is a big match. It's two out of three falls. As I started watching this match, it starts out, I think, Liger and Guerrero. But there's a point in the match where it's La Parca and Tiger Mask in the ring together. And if you're... Most people just know La Parca from WCW, where he was more of a comedy act, the chairman of the board or whatever. And I love La Parca. He was the guy.
Yeah, he was smart enough to embrace American wrestling philosophy and make some money at it.
But for me,
because he's one of the standout luchadors. When you think, who do you remember from WCW Nitro? 9 times out of 10, it's La Parca, because he was smart enough to do that.
When I see these two guys that I don't – they don't run in the same circle. So to see them in the ring together, it was just like, what in the world's going on? There's two refs in the ring. So there's like one ref following the action. I don't know what the other ref's doing. What is unique about not just this match but other Mexican tag team matches is if you're in the ring and you go out, one of your partners comes in.
Uh-huh.
This is a great match. I mean, just back and forth, different things going on, lots of spots. But it's like I said, it's two out of three falls. And sometimes in their tag team matches, they would have a captain. And so that's the guy you were trying to pin. And sometimes, oh, what was the other word they used?
El Capitan.
No. El Capitan, which is Spanish for the captain. There's a one point where there's an El Rudo chant gets going because most of the bad guys in this match are the Mexican guys. Right. So there's El Rudo, El Rudo. That's a pretty cool thing. And then, but the good guys go over. So
as it always is and forever should be in wrestling.
Yeah. You have a good match, and then let the good guys win.
And let the heel get their heat back. Rusev proved it. It's great. I'm so proud that he was able to eat that John Cena loss and keep his heat.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to go that comedy, the guy came in on a tank.
That's right. I think they see money in him. I think there's potential with Rusev to do big things. Eventually there's got to be a little change, but, you can turn him babyface and have him, and you get another year or two out of it at least.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. What's you got another match you want to talk about?
Well, since you brought it up, I'll bring up AAA. I think it was AAA when Jake Roberts and Conan faced each other in a steel cage match. I don't have a lot to say about the match because it's – well, go ahead.
I think that's the next night.
Oh, is it? I was kind of wondering about that. Yeah. When you said it, I was wondering if, if that was going to happen. Anyway, the match itself, it is what it is. It was early 90s, Jake Roberts, full height of some of his demons, WCW, WWF, kind of washed their hands of him. So he goes to Mexico, has a match with Conan. He's got Sensational Sherry in his corner. And over in the corner, they show this figure watching the match. And I don't know why. I don't know everything that was going on, but it was Mascarita Sagrada, who was a Mexican mini. And he looks like a toddler in the full lucha. He's got the mask and the bodysuit to match his much larger counterpart. But, man, he looks like he's about 2.5-3 feet tall. But he's not bulky. He's got a small frame as well. Mm-hmm. He looks like a little kid. Dressed up like if nobody told you, you'd say that's a 4-year-old.
Yeah,
dressed up like a wrestler. That's what he looks like. And this cage looks like it's about 15 foot high. It's not the traditional steel cage. It's about the height of the Hell in a Cell cage.
Yeah,
but there's no roof on the top. The only reason you need to watch this match is for the last minute or two when he has finally had enough of what's going on and he climbs to the top of that steel cage. From the outside of the ring, and Conan holds Jake Roberts down, and he splashes Jake Roberts from the top of that cage. It is awesome.
Wow!
It's such a cool moment. He dives off the top of that cage with a reckless abandon, and I'm talking not a cross body block. Jake Roberts is laid out flat on the mat.
Superflies.
He superflies him off the top of the cage.
Wow!
It is incredible, and the place erupts. It's awesome.
I may have misspoke. It may have been the same night because I think the last match of their series was a hair versus hair match.
It was Jake Roberts and Conan.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it was. I've seen it too, but I didn't watch it yesterday.
So yeah, I want to go back. Yeah, I definitely want to see that. That's pretty cool.
You're right. It was a hair versus hair match.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Let me stay on. I talked about Eddie Guerrero a little bit, and we're talking about the lucha, the high flying. April 16th, which is today. We're actually recording this April 16th. So 21 years ago today, in the Super Junior Cup, it's Black Tiger, who is Eddie Guerrero under the mask, versus Chris Benoit. First of all, if you say, hey, do you want to watch this Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit match? The answer is yes.
Right.
If you say, oh, and by the way, Eddie Guerrero's wearing a tiger mask, a black tiger mask, yes, then I definitely want to watch this match. Now, here's a little tidbit about the Super J, this tournament. this was the first year that they did it. And the one of the reasons they did it is they knew that Jushin Thunder Liger was getting over. And they basically just said, hey, we want you to book this tournament. So the whole tournament, he books the whole thing. And he books, and he doesn't even make it to the finals. It's Chris Benoit, Wild Pegasus beat Sasuke in the finals. And I think we talked about that match on one of our other episodes. This is not a this is a solid match. Like, this is not this just the most amazing match you've ever seen. It's just a solid match that, you know, good, some really good spots. The end.
Does Chris Benoit have the mask on?
No. He
lost the mask.
He's kind of got he's got this weird hairdo. 92 and 93, 94. He's got, his hair is a little bit longer.
Yeah.
It's a little bit puffy. But that guy's so good, man. He was such a good wrestler.
Yeah, he was. He was.
Such a good wrestler. And the finish, Black Tiger is going to go for a frog splash. But Benoit gets up and kind of catches him into an arm drag and just pins him. It kind of comes out of nowhere, which was... It was nice that it was just kind of, like I said, it just came out of nowhere, which if you watch the Cornette Carolinas collection, a lot of the finishes used to come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But again, and it
it's
did.
It's not a bad thing to not telegraph your finish.
No.
You know what I mean?
It was supposed to be a one-time event, one night, and then it really grew and became very popular. And eventually, of course, if you're booking the thing, you're going to book yourself to win, and Liger won. Several years in a row, but that night he put Wild Pegasus over in the tournament finals.
Well, all right, then. What else you got?
What you talked about on the last episode? You talked about Jerry Lawler.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned he brought in his court jester Doink. And maybe you can fill in the backstory that led up to Survivor Series, November 23rd, 1994. But it's Jerry Lawler and his court, which is three midgets, against Doink.
Dink and
two others.
Stink and Pink.
Something, yeah. Dink, Pink, and Stink. And yeah, then
I forget what they called them.
Sleazy, Queasy, and one of the Sneezy, maybe, was Jerry Lawler. On commentary for that match is Gorilla Monsoon and Vince McMahon.
Huh.
You want to get... I'm glad that it happened. But it probably wasn't the best idea. Because you basically have the same person, the same personality.
Right.
Totally different styles as far as the knowledge of the business or whatever. Or how a match works. But at one point... Jerry Lawler, they're having issues or whatever, and Vince just says, oh, they need to regroup here. And Gorilla Monsoon says, well, why didn't they have some kind of plan when they got here? just kind of this logical thing. It is a comedy match.
Really?
Yeah. And it's funny. I'm going to be honest.
The midget matches used to be, that was what they were. They were a special attraction.
This is one of those things where I disagree, you know. Meltzer gave it -2.5 stars. I watched this two nights ago, and I died laughing.
Right.
I was watching this, and it was just hilarious to me.
Right.
It was so funny. And you know why? Because of Jerry Lawler.
Right.
His facial expressions, the way he sold it. He's just great, man.
I love Jerry Lawler.
So he's so freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
But again, not a 5-star classic.
I'm shocked, really.
Did I tell you that Doink, or maybe they just called him the wrestling clown, but at a local show about a year ago, he won a title. He came and wrestled somebody.
He's been dead a couple of years.
Right, but I'm telling you, whoever they had playing him, I knew Matt Bourne was dead, but I...
Right.
I left that night thinking, man.
Doink is one of those characters that you still see a lot on independent shows. Because you can do that.
Yeah.
You can put that on anybody and they can do it.
Yeah.
Matt Bourne wasn't the only guy to play him in WWF.
Oh, really?
Steve Kern played him.
Steve
Kern. Brooklyn Brawler played him. Huh. But Matt Bourne was the original.
You get the wig and the face paint.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. But, yeah, Steve Kern played him for a while, too. They did a deal where there were two of them.
Right.
And it was Steve Kern.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And Matt Bourne was good. Matt Bourne was a good wrestler.
Yeah. Big Josh.
Yeah. But it was shocking the first time you see Doink and you think, what? If you didn't know that he had been in the Rat Pack with Ted DiBiase and Jim Duggan. And
yeah.
You didn't know about all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, until you realized who he was, read about it in a wrestling magazine. But then you'd see him get in the ring and you'd say, wow, I mean, this guy, he can wrestle.
So so during this match, Vince McMahon's like, he puts over Doink as, oh, yeah, Doink is a great tactician. I'm like, yeah. Man, why in the crap did you make him a clown?
That's the way that it seems like. I just can see them thinking that this is a great idea. I don't think they do anything thinking it's going to suck. I think they're like, hey, this is the circus. Why don't we have a clown?
Right.
I don't think it was there.
We need a trash man. We need cowboys.
I think people think there's a lot more that goes on in their minds than really goes on in their minds. Right. I don't think they see it as, let's bury this guy with this stupid gimmick. I think they see it as, let's throw it in the wall and see if it sticks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
And sometimes it does.
Sometimes you get Doink. Sometimes you get Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
But right. You never know if you don't try.
What other you had a couple other matches.
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of stuff to talk about. First, I'll talk about, you see Ric Flair, mm-hmm. after the deal with Vader, he's got to go somewhere. He's got to do something. He's having a match with Sting on WCW Saturday night. And it's been announced that Hulk Hogan is returning or coming to WCW.
Mm.
So you have Sting and Flair have this match on WCW Saturday night, and a fan comes out of the crowd and attacks Sting, and come to find out it's Sensational Sherry. And Ric Flair turns heel on Sting to set up the Flair-Hogan match. In the process of all this, Dustin Rhodes is feuding with Bunkhouse Buck mm-hmm. and Terry Funk. And he goes to Arn Anderson, who's also a babyface at the time, and he says, Arn, I need your help. I don't need you to fight for me. All I need you to do is back me up in this fight. And I know that there have been problems with my family and your family, but if you'll just stand beside me while I go fight these guys, I'll fight them.
Yeah.
I just need somebody there to support me.
Yeah.
We get to the match. It's at Bash at the Beach, which was also the time that Hogan and Flair, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and talk about it too. So you get to the match. Dustin Rhodes is working over Bunkhouse Buck and Terry Funk. Da-da-da-da. He's gets the chance to tag Arn, but he doesn't tag him. He keeps on working both of these guys over, and Arn is just cheering him on. You talk about like he won a Little League World Series. One of the first shows we ever did, you said that, and it stuck with me. And he's pumping his fist, yeah. And he's getting the crowd riled up, getting everybody into it. Finally, Dustin Rhodes makes the tag to Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson hits the tag, jumps in the ring, does the fist pump again like he's fixing to go to town, reaches over to make sure Dustin Rhodes is okay, snatches him up, DDTs yes. him, and then all three of them beat Dustin Rhodes up, hold his hand down, stomp him on the arm. Classic old school heel turn
yes.
from Arn Anderson, because Rick's a heel now,
yeah.
so Arn's got to be a heel.
Right.
You know, they always go together. So then Ric Flair cuts a promo where he talks about how proud he is of Arn Anderson. He's got his match with Hulk Hogan coming up, but he just wanted Arn to know how proud he was of him. Like, he finally got his head screwed, you know, just like me. He finally figured out what was really going on with these people. So now Flair's happy, and we go into the dream match that WWF fumbled and bumbled and didn't get right. But to me, WCW gave us too soon.
Yes.
Because Hulk Hogan on his first night, his first match against Ric Flair, wins the title.
Yeah.
Where's the story? There should have been a story.
And 7 years later, this company's out of business.
Yes. Over that ego.
Yeah.
He played just as much a part in the demise of that company as anything, that ego. The original plan was they'd trade the belt back and forth, and then he didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
He wanted to hold on to the belt the whole time. But what should have happened is he should have come into the company, and I get it, he's Hulk Hogan. He don't start out in the opening match.
Right.
But that's when you have the feud with Vader. And they do business together.
Yeah.
And it builds Hulk Hogan up.
Yeah.
And you got Flair running dominant as the world champion, as a heel. And you have Hogan chasing Ric Flair and constantly Ric Flair throwing up blocks, whatever.
Getting disqualified.
You got to face Arn Anderson. You got to do this. And you build this up over months and months and months. And then you have a cage match. So that Ric Flair can't escape. Arn Anderson can't help him. Mm. You don't go right to cage match.
Right.
Right out of the gate with Hogan winning the title. It just, where do you go from there?
Yeah. You think Hogan was a mark for the belt?
I think he was a mark for himself.
Yeah.
He needed to be the champion. He needed to be the greatest.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ric Flair was sacrificed.
Because
that could have been a huge money build.
Yeah,
I mean it just could have been.
But they gave you what you wanted.
And they gave you what you wanted the first night.
Yeah. Hogan beating Flair wasn't good enough. You had to have Shaq there,
and Mr. T.
Oh goodness gracious!
So yeah, they gave it away the first night. I mean, where do you go from there? But it's still worth watching the match because it was. For the first time, I know they faced each other in WWF, but it was at house shows. As far as on pay-per-view, big-time event, it was the first real televised match between the two of them.
Yeah.
So you have to see that because it was a dream match at the time.
Yeah, it was. It was.
What else you got?
I thought you were going to lead up to...
I am, but I thought you had more stuff.
No, I want you to tie in. I got one more. I got the ECW match that we're going to talk about. But I want you to tie in. You've done teased me because Dustin's got to get back at the stud stable.
Oh, well, I didn't even think about that.
You weren't going to talk about that?
No. That wasn't the match that I think everybody needs to watch, but I'll talk about it. It ain't no problem when Dustin now has his feud. And Dusty comes out and says, Arn Anderson's a walk behind. And when you walk behind, the view never changes, baby.
Oh, yeah.
I remember to this day.
He offered up his innocence.
I think he paid him back and scored.
To hell with you, Arn Anderson. Yeah.
I got to go back and watch that. That's not on a pay-per-view, though.
That was on Clash of the... That was... if you go watch the Clash of the Champions, where the tag team match happens. Yeah. Dusty and Dustin versus Arn and Buck, I guess. And Terry Funk's in the picture.
Yeah.
That's on a Clash of the Champions, but... I've mentioned this before. The sign. Dusty plus Dustin equals Texas.
Yeah. I don't know how you arrive at that conclusion, but okay.
I'm not a math wizard.
Not a math magician.
But yeah, Dusty Rhodes, that was a great...
If you can carry this fat, spindly-legged old man, I want to be your partner.
Yeah. The Earps were blood. The Kennedys were blood. The Rhodes are blood. Oh, I need to do that one.
Like Morgan. Yeah, that's right.
The Kennedys were blood. The Earps were blood. Daddy. I love me some Dusty Rhodes.
I know that you do. And I'm a big Dusty Rhodes fan too, but I can tell when I'm critical of him, you don't like it.
I used to, you know, in Pro Wrestling Illustrated back in the day, there was one of their columnists was a guy named, or his name he went by was Eddie Elner.
Mm-hmm.
And he hated Hogan and Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, he was the heel writer.
And I almost was like, I'm going to write this guy. He needs to stop. He has gone too far.
I don't think we need to go there.
What were you going to talk about?
What ECW match were you going to bring up?
Saturday, February 5th, 1994. It's a house show, but it's recorded for ECW home video.
Mm-hmm. The night, is this the night the line was crossed?
The line was indeed crossed that night. So everybody knows that WrestleMania this year ended in a triple threat match.
Mm-hmm.
That happened because of this night. The first ever triple threat match. A little different. Sabu and Shane Douglas are going to start out. They're going to wrestle for 15 minutes. Whoever wins is going to face Terry Funk for the ECW title. If nobody wins after 15 minutes, then Terry Funk's going to come in, and it's an hour-long time limit total. Terry Funk's going to come in, and we're going to have three guys wrestling for the first time. You got Sherry Martel comes out with Shane. And then as they're kind of getting into the ring, Paul E. Dangerously, who is Sabu's manager, comes in, clocks Sherry upside the head with the phone.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure she no-sold it. And then
of course she did.
Joey Styles, right when they start out and the match is outside the ring, and Douglas and Sabu were just, man, going at it as only they could at that time. Joey Styles like, there aren't any mats on the floor. We're not in Atlanta.
Yeah. They always early on made sure you understood that. They were the alternative.
So the way that they booked this match, it is an hour-long match. And at this point in time, Terry Funk's about 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to Shane Douglas because he carries this match. So they wrestle the first 15, and at some point, right before Terry Funk comes in, Sabu does a spot on the outside and allegedly hurts his leg. So at 15 minutes, they basically say Sabu cannot continue. He's carried to the back, and now it's one-on-one Shane Douglas and Terry Funk. And Terry Funk, man, holds nothing back. Pile drives him on the floor. At 33 minutes, Sabu's back in. So now you're, for the first time in this match, or first time ever, you're seeing three guys. First time that I remember, you're seeing three guys in a match all trying to fight each other. And at one point, Funk goes up and grabs Joey Styles' headset and just starts, get up here, come and fight me, you yellow-bellied coward, you son of a... I mean, just starts, you piece of... You know, he's just taunting him. And nothing happens. And Joey Styles is like, well, Terry Funk took my headset. I couldn't. But while he's doing all this.
Well, Terry Funk took my headset.
While they're doing that, you know, Sabu and Shane Douglas, you're kind of just fighting in the ring. They do the spot where they do the double sleeper. That was pretty cool. Sabu goes and botches and like with for most of this match, there's not any near falls, to my knowledge. There's none of this, one, two, there's none of that.
Right.
It's rare. And even as time's running down, I think with like under a minute to go, the ref finally gets in. But like, so it's a time limit draw. And as soon as and they're counting down the time, you know, there's 50 minutes, 5 minutes, 1 minute. But when that bell rings and the announcer calls it a draw, the crowd just breaks into applause.
Right.
There's this appreciation from the crowd that we've just seen something.
Yeah, revolutionary.
Right.
And it was.
Now, luckily on this is VO.com, which I've never seen before.
Yeah, there's some good wrestling on there.
The video quality on this one, terrible. I guess it's copied off of VHS or something. But then they go...
It's on DVD, though.
I don't know if they go to the back, but they're interviewing everybody. And Terry Funk's there, his face covered in blood, and he is crying.
Mm-hmm.
How about how much he loves wrestling and how he respects Shane Douglas and how he respects Sabu and... WCW ain't worth a crap. WWF ain't worth a crap. And ECW is where wrestling is. And then
He goes back and forth like that a lot.
Terry Funk leaves, and Todd Gordon, the owner of the company, comes, and he sells it like a real press conference. He comes out and it's like, hey, we want to thank all you guys for being here. Don't forget, there's snacks in the back, and there's flash bulbs going off. And then Paul E. comes out with Sabu. And the two guy, 911 and another guy are holding Sabu. And they're saying, and Paul E.'s like, just don't let him see the table. If you don't let him see the table, he'll be all right. And Sabu is playing up this, that he's homicidal, genocidal. Mm-hmm. He's still doing that whole gimmick. Paul E. comes down, you know, cuts a great promo. And then Shane Douglas.
Yeah. Who
just comes out and is awesome. Terry Funk comes out to confront him. And Terry Funk, man, is just, Shane Douglas is yelling and hot. And Terry Funk's like, you know, I didn't say anything bad about you. Why are you going to say anything about me? And just stays real calm, and then they just fight.
Right.
So, like, this is what I'll say to you. I'm going to be honest. I just watched this last night. I've seen bits and pieces of it before. But when you tell me, all right.
On the commercials.
Huh?
On the commercials for the DVDs. You say, I've seen bits and pieces. Well, let's be honest.
I know. I've seen some of the spots from this.
Oh, I got you. I got you. On the commercials.
Where?
I don't know. Look, I have this whole episode, I haven't messed with you about anything. I just needed to get on you about something.
This is what I'll tell you. I wasn't overly excited about watching an hour-long match. I thought about changing and picking another match for this spot. It is worth watching the hour-long match to get to those promos after the match, in my opinion. Just it is just great, and it's emotion, and it's this heat that is not on TV today in WWE. Like when these guys are talking, like, I believe what Terry Funk said. I believe them all, and I don't believe anything those guys say on WWE anymore. And I, you know, that's just my take on it.
A year ago,
mm-hmm.
when we started this show,
yeah.
Say 3 months in. Let's say 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay. If I said, Heath, this match is going to take an hour and 20 minutes of your life.
Yeah.
You're going to watch the match with the stuff before, with the stuff after, hour and 20 minutes. But you need to watch it because I think you'll enjoy it. You either wouldn't have done it, or you would have said you did it, but what you actually did was watch 5 minutes of it and then click the thing over and watch 5 minutes and then click the thing and watch 5 minutes and then click the thing and watch 5 minutes. And you would have had 20 minutes in watching that hour and 20 minutes worth of stuff.
Right.
We can agree on that, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But to do this show today, you on your own said, without me telling you, hey, this is a match you need to check out. You made the decision to invest an hour and 20 minutes so you could talk about that with me, knowing that I've seen the match.
Yeah. Knowing that even though I just watched it last night, that you would remember more about it than I would.
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true because, I mean, you watched it last night, so clearly.
Right.
But knowing that, you invested an hour and 20 minutes to watch that just so we can talk about it on this show.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me happy.
And I not only, and I know you give me crap for this, I not only watched the match, I went back through the Wrestling Observer archives to read everything that was written about this match.
That's what I'm saying.
And I went back, not just on the Observer, just doing research, other blogs and articles written about this match, just to kind of get a feel for, because that was a historic moment for ECW.
Yes. But a year ago, you think you would have done that?
Nah.
Why you do it now?
I'm, okay, so the way.
This is not me setting you up. I'm just saying.
No.
Like, I'm impressed.
No. So,
and I've never knocked your. I know that we goof off on here.
Right.
But that's me goofing off with you. But I also knew that you right. didn't invest as much time watching the matches as I did.
Right, right.
And now you are.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious what's prompted that.
Well, I really did on the show, I really did what we advise people to do. I don't watch Raw live anymore. And so instead of, hey, this is straight shoot. If you add up, so these three, four episodes, you add up the time of all the matches that I looked at, it's 3 hours.
There you go.
So guess what? I don't watch Monday Night Raw live. Especially right. this week, the week we're recording this, they were in London. I knew the spoilers at 5 o'clock.
Not only that, when they go overseas, I know nothing's going to happen of any consequence.
Right. So instead of throughout the week, me trying to get in front of my TV and finding time to watch 3 hours of Raw, I am now seeking out, on your advice and Pro Fight Database and what Dave Meltzer recommends. Well, that's a
good place to get good matches to watch.
Then I'm searching. And now I'm, like I said, you know, I missed 10 or more years of wrestling when it was at its peak.
Yeah.
And I'm going back and just, you know.
You know, on the network, they just added the first year of Attitude Era Raw.
Yes. And that so is.
I'm kind of looking forward to going back and watching
some. And Raw, you're looking at, those are 44 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing much to them.
But yeah.
Well, it may have been 2 hours, but still, I mean, that's nothing when you take the commercials out.
Well, no, I mean, it was only, is it the first year of Raw period or just first year?
No, the Attitude Era Raws is what I'm saying.
Then that's two hours. Yeah.
Yeah, not the first.
Now, see, a lot of that I saw. A lot of that I was going over to my buddy's house on Mondays, and we were flipping between Nitro and.
Yeah.
I would say that was, NWO was 96, so I would say the whole year of 97.
Okay, you got to see all that.
Yeah, I watched all that live, you know, followed that. And but yeah, I mean, ironically, the way I view wrestling now is the way we tell people on this show to view wrestling.
Yeah, me too.
That I don't have a lot of time to waste. I got as many hours in the day as everybody else. I got 3 kids. I got a sick wife. I like wrestling. It's my outlet. I want a good outlet. I don't want a bad outlet. So you give me a choice of I can watch 3 hours of what Vince tells me I want to see, or I can watch 3 hours of what Mark tells me I need to watch. I'm going to pick. Listen, here's the thing, fans. Everybody's talking about what's your dream card. Your dream card's out there. Your 10 matches you want to see, they're out there.
That's awesome.
So book it in your head. It's like, man, these are the 10 matches I want to watch. Shut up and watch them. Be a happy wrestling fan.
Right. I've heard this. I've heard of this match, or I've heard of that match, and I want to watch it. But I think I'd rather watch a crappy wrestling show and then complain about it for the next 3 days. No. Just don't do that.
No.
That's great. I don't know that I even want to tell my story because I think what you just said was so great.
What story?
It's a good story, but what you just said about booking your own dream card, it's so good that I don't want to ruin it by telling my story.
Well, you don't want to be a story topper Stan.
Oh, I don't mind doing that.
Well, I mean, that's just people complain about Michael Cole. None of the matches we have told you about involve Michael Cole. Some of them ain't even in English. No. You ain't going to understand a word they're saying. So, that's what I'm saying. Like, I love wrestling more now than I ever have in my whole life. I appreciate when Justin Donahue, when you tweet Mark and tag me in it, people like that, that's what we want. Wrestling is awesome. It's not terrible. Vince hasn't killed it. Why? If you love wrestling, why make yourself miserable with it?
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy. Let me pull the curtain back. Pro Fight Database, profightdb.com. Click on the year. They're going to list the top matches of that year.
The top star.
Yes. Right?
Like everything,
the top rated matches.
Pretty much everything that's 4 stars and above,
yeah,
and all the major promotions, there's a list of them.
But then within that, you can click on the card. You can pretty much see any wrestling match that's been televised. It's an exhaustive resource. And then guess what? You see a match. There was one match I was searching for. I can't even remember what year it's from. But it's Doug Furness and LaFont.
Dan Crawford.
And it was the match of the year. It was a tag team match. I looked everywhere for that. And I was heartbroken. I couldn't find it because I wanted to watch.
I tried to find it for you yesterday. I
appreciate that.
I got a few DVDs that I burned from VHS, and I just scanned through them, and I couldn't find it either.
Yeah.
So what year was it from? Do you remember?
I don't remember. It's in my 27 pages of show notes. You know, you used to make fun of me for having so many notes, but
have I done
all right today?
You didn't use them that much because you actually – I've been watching you.
Yeah.
You actually watched everything, so you didn't use your notes that much.
Yeah.
Didn't need them because you actually watched the matches. You knew what you were talking about.
I didn't have a 5-page spreadsheet of Nitro results.
Right, because the stuff you talked about, you watched.
Yeah. And now, from our discussion, I want to go back and watch – pretty much everything you've mentioned, most of those matches I haven't seen. And you're telling me for between every match we have listed on here, that your cost is going to be $9.99 for the network, and then all the other ones are on YouTube or whatever. Listen, if you got a day or a month or a year, you go on there, just go on YouTube, search NJPW. Sorry, my hours of matches like Road Warrior Hawk and Bam Bam Bigelow versus Stan Hansen and Andre.
Especially if you start getting back in the late 80s from 85 to 95. I mean, you will see a lot of your favorites. Bam Bam Bigelow versus Big Van Vader. And then you see, I've seen the Vader and Bigelow versus the Steiners. Is a match that I watched one time.
Goldberg has a good run over there. Brock Lesnar had
some matches there. Vader and Bigelow versus Muda and Hase.
Yeah.
I mean, anything with Kenta Kobashi, Mitsuhiro Misawa, Stan Hansen, Terry Gordy, Steve Williams.
Because
Jumbo Tsuruta.
Oh, yeah. Because the Japanese style. The Japanese wrestling does not fit into the American wrestling box. American wrestling in 2015 and before has to fit into this nice, neat little box. And Japanese wrestling does not have to fit in that box. So everything I hear everybody complaining about is you don't like the little box. Well, guess what, dummy? You ain't got to watch wrestling that's in this nice, neat little box. You ain't got to watch paint-by-numbers wrestling.
Right. Which I'm thinking I might have coined that term. Can I just throw that out there?
No. I believe the record will show. The audio will show. Yeah, you did coin that term. I coined the term Markipedia.
True. That's still got to do with me, so I'm all right with
it. You got too many gimmicks for this show.
Hey, you can never have too many gimmicks, boss.
Never thought about
that. Ask Mick Foley. And I was going to tell this whole big story about Mick Foley, but I liked what you said, so I'm not going to do it. Because you shined at the end of this episode, and I want to keep it that way.
I appreciate that. You going to let me go over this time, ain't you?
Are
you going to submit to me?
Yep, I tap out. I mean, because if I tell the story, it's going to make yours look like a booger. So
now that's my gimmick. So save that for, you know, we should do a whole episode on Mick Foley.
Yeah,
just,
I mean,
his different matches and stuff.
I can do that because I want to talk about his stuff with Eddie Gilbert and then this whole deal with the Nasty Boys and so
we'll save that for another
time.
That,
yeah.
So anyway, here's what we want you to do. This is what we do best. Okay, listen, I'm going to guarantee you this. There's no other of the thousands of wrestling podcasts. We're the only one doing what we do. We don't. You've heard me say it before. I'll say it again. We don't do a 3-hour recap of a 3-hour crappy Raw. We talk about matches we like. We talk about matches we think you'd like. Matches that are oddities, matches that are comedy, whatever. We talk about the wrestling you grew up with and the wrestling you need to watch that maybe you haven't seen. So here's what I want you to do. This is your homework assignment. Number one, send us your questions for Mark using the hashtag marking out on our wrestling Facebook group, The Wrestling You Grew Up With, or on Twitter. You can tweet me at Heath Mulliken and Mark at
The DDK Show.
Here's what I want you to do. I want you to see if you can stump us. So send us 3 matches that you think we should watch. I don't even care what year it is. Don't pull something off the net. Don't pull something that is easy to find. Pull something off Japan. Say, hey, guys, have you seen this? What was the match? Somebody posted something good on our, I can't remember what it was, on our Facebook group the other day. Mark posted the great Kevin Sullivan and Mike Davis. That was great. You did have a misleading headline, though.
Yeah.
Brainwashes Dusty Rhodes.
Intentionally misleading.
So let us know what's 3 matches that we need to watch, and I'll watch the whole thing. What was that match with Antonio Inoki and against the other guy on the island?
Yeah.
I'm not going
to
watch
it. I'm not watching that. I'd like to. One time, just to say,
it's like 5 or 6 hours, ain't
it? Yeah, it's a long time. But I don't know. I think a lot of that's them getting there and all that. I don't know that they actually wrestled for 5 hours.
Nah. Go to doubledropkick.com. You can see all of our episodes. You can leave a comment on any episode. See a banner, click a banner. That's our motto. You'll see the... You'll see the banner, the logo for the Wrestling Observer Figure 4 online. It's $10.99 a month. Click on it. We get a little kickback from that. Well worth the price. Going back and reading the Observers from, especially when we're talking about the NWO angle, it gives you all the backstage stuff. The stuff written about this three-way dance between Sabu, Terry Funk, and Shane Douglas. Just an incredible article there. What have I left out?
The part where we tell everybody our names and go home.
Yeah. This is the go home show for today. So, hey, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Double Dropkick Show. As always, I'm Heath Mulliken.
And I'm Mark Whitman.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.